their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado, this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker. Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. Thanks again for joining us today. What do we got today, Rick?
Well, we just got back from a workshop that we did up in the Badlands of South Dakota. So I think we're going to chat a little bit about that and some landscape stuff.
Absolutely. That sounds great. We've also got a reader question posted from our Facebook page. We'll take care of that in a little bit as well. But let's talk about landscape photography in the Badlands, because this is a really fun place.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you joining me as my guest pro. That was really awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
And I've been doing this workshop now since 2011. So this was 9 years. And I don't get tired of going to the Badlands.
No, it's a great spot.
So, yeah, Badlands National Park. It's in South Dakota. It's in western South Dakota. And we stay in the little town of Wall, home of Wall Drug, for those people who...
Which is a truly bizarre place.
Yeah, but they have pie, and that's a good thing,
okay. And
donuts and stuff. So, they're not much in town, but the Badlands National Park is just amazing.
Yeah.
I can only describe it as being sort of surreal or even otherworldly.
Yeah. One thing I like about it, because it's getting harder and harder to achieve this at a lot of places, is although you'll see other photographers there, you're not going to find yourself lined up with 30 other photographers at some famous spot. That's just very unlikely to happen there.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because it's a little bit more remote than some of the more popular destinations, even though Badlands is actually a very popular national park. It gets a lot of visitors, but most of those visitors are just driving through on a loop.
Yeah.
Come off of Interstate 90 through western South Dakota there, and you can just drive the loop and come out on the other side and rejoin the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people just do that, or they'll, you know, use their RVs or whatever. But I think when we were out there in the 4 days of shooting that we did, we maybe ran into some other photographers twice.
Yeah.
I mean, and most of those were in the evenings when we had already been shooting. It was not a big, and nobody was in anybody's shots.
Yeah, and unlike some places, there are a lot of places you can shoot. You know, even in some of the popular locations, boy, you can just move all over the place and not collide with someone else, which is a great thing.
True. So, you know, as destinations go, it's one of my favorites. And the terrain there is, like I said, kind of surreal. It's clay, volcanic ash, eroded hills. And they have striations and sedimentary deposits and colors. And a lot of these colors don't really show up during the daytime when most people mm-hmm. visit. So if you photograph in the Badlands, the early evening, early morning before sunrise and sunset, you can get some spectacular colors. And the other thing that's really tremendous in the Badlands is when you get clouds.
Right.
In fact, that, in my opinion, is the reason why I keep going back every year, because they're totally unpredictable. Sometimes you get great clouds. Sometimes you get no clouds. And sometimes you get clouds that just obscure the sun and, you know, make everything go flat.
Yeah,
it just depends. So you have to be adaptable to your kind of shooting. Not every shot is the, you know, what we call the heroic panoramic landscape.
Right, right.
But there are some really huge overlooks there that are just, you just look out into this vastness, these rock formations. What kind of other things do we? Oh, then there's wildlife there.
Yeah.
Not a place known specifically for wildlife photography. But we encountered bighorn sheep and bison and prairie dogs and what else did we see? I'm trying to think. I've seen turkeys there mm-hmm. in the spring.
Pronghorn sometimes.
Yeah, true. Pronghorn. Yeah. I think we saw one
yeah.
out there. So, you know, it's the kind of thing where if you have a longer lens with you, because maybe you're driving through,
mm-hmm.
You know, in your vehicle, then, you know, you could maybe do a little wildlife photography.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly we were there for the landscapes. So let's talk a little bit about what did we bring? What did we shoot with?
Everyone always likes hearing about gear, so
right.
Do a little segment on that.
So I'm going to let you go first because mine's probably 99% you can just the say, same.
Yeah. Ditto. So I was shooting with a Nikon Z7 body, and we've talked a little bit about it. And then I had a 14 to 30 wide angle zoom, a 24 to 7 mid range zoom, a 70 to 200 f4, f mount lens, and then I also brought the 300 millimeter PF that we talked about recently, and I had a 1.4 teleconverter too. That's what I brought as the primary gear. I had polarizers and some solid neutral density filters in case we wanted to do long exposure. I really didn't end up using filters though.
No, neither did I. I had the same kit, Z7 body. Z6 was a backup body.
Mm-hmm.
14 to 30 Z mount, 24 to 70 F4 Z mount. I think your 24 to 70 was the 2.8 version, right? Okay, so
right.
A little fancier, but you know, both are excellent.
Both are
lens.
Really good lenses.
The F4 is a little bit smaller to pack. 70 to 200 F4, like mm-hmm. yours, which I used with a tripod collar
mm-hmm.
that I have on there, because yep. that's an optional accessory with that lens.
I've got one on mine too. It's nice just when you want to go vertical. It's
from a tripod, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
300 PF, just because I had it. Because I also brought 1.4 and 1.7 teleconverters. I also packed a fisheye lens, but then I didn't use that.
Yeah.
So speaking of...
I often like packing a fisheye lens and then not using it.
I've used it there, and it's actually can be really cool, but you need the right conditions. I like it at sunrise when you get the sun on the horizon. There's this little starburst thing going on. But we didn't have that condition this year. There was clouds. The clouds were great, but they tended to be more on the horizon. So speaking of things we didn't use, I didn't end up using my fisheye, but there was another thing I didn't end up using, and this was weird. You never would have thought about it. And that was my remote release cord.
Yeah.
Which I have. I'm not a huge fan of the USB plug remote cords.
Neither
though.
Am I. If I'm using an L bracket, it's just so awkward plugging them in where you have to plug them in.
Yeah, because they plug into the left side of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Nikon DSLRs, or at least the pro-level DSLRs that use the 10-pin connector, that's a screw-in threaded connector, doesn't come out easily, and is on the front of the camera. So you can put your camera body in a L bracket, you can turn it vertically, nothing gets moved around. So there is a workaround to not using your... because some people just don't have a remote, or maybe you forget mm-hmm. it. So there's a neat tip that you can do. And on Nikons, there's two different ways you can do it. And I think we both used one or more of these in the field. So I think you were using 2-second delay timer.
Yeah, self-timer.
The self-timer.
Yeah.
On a 2-second delay. That gives the camera a chance to settle down before. Now, these are mirrorless cameras, so you don't need to worry about mirror lockup.
No.
But
if you're not using a remote, then you're triggering the shutter with your finger, and right. that can be a source of vibration.
Correct. And that's why the 2-second delay is nice.
Mm-hmm.
The other tool that is out there in Nikon land is something called exposure delay mode. And you can find that. And that's one that I put into my menu, where you can customize a menu. So easy access. On the Z bodies, I put it into the little I menu so you can bring it up with one touch, turn it on or off. And I will set that to usually 1 second or, you know, just depends on the setting. And the nice thing about the exposure delay mode is that if you don't use a mirrorless camera, then you don't need to use mirror lockup. So you can set exposure delay to 1 second. You press the shutter once, it raises the mirror. And then the delay happens.
Yeah.
At least I think that's how it works. But some cameras have mirror lockup. Mirrorless cameras don't because they have no mirror. And in fact, that was a moment I had of, you know, sometimes you have those little weird epiphanies out there.
Yeah,
and I was looking for my mirror lockup function because, you know, that's how I'm used to shooting. I've been doing this for 10, 15 years.
I hope you smacked your head.
I kind of did, yeah.
Realization.
I've had those moments. Well, you know, with all things new, you have these realizations. The first time we ever shot together, we were in Rocky Mountain National Park,
mm-hmm.
and this was in 2004, so we're going back a little ways.
Just a bit.
Now, that one I had filmed, but the first time I shot digital, the first time I shot digital was on Nikonian's trip to the Badlands in 2005, mm-hmm. and I'm sitting somewhere and going, man, my shutter speed is getting really slow, and then I realized, hey, I can change the ISO.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you know, so that was 2005 revelation with just getting into digital.
Mm-hmm.
2019, getting into mirrorless, you realize you don't have a mirror lockup set. Anyway, that was just kind of a fun thing.
By the way, one of the things that we talked about with the group, because a lot of people were using Nikons, not all. We had some people using Olympus and Fuji also, which is cool. But the... with the Nikon Z cameras, if you're trying to shoot an automatic bracket, exposure bracket, by putting it on self-timer, it'll make all the shots on its own. It'll just go beep, 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 or beep, beep, you know, however many you're doing. If you're using the exposure delay mode, you have to press down the shutter for each one. A little trivia.
That's a cool function. And we'll talk a little bit about that.
It would be cooler if it didn't reset itself off of set self-timer when the camera automatically powers off, which can happen fairly quickly.
Well, hey, Nikon, if you're listening, what would be really great would be just to set it so that with auto-bracketing, it just takes the three shots. Because there are cameras like Fuji's that just do that. When you put it into bracketing, it just takes the three shots or five shots for you. So that's kind of cool.
Every camera has issues.
Well, you know, we had a really wonderful group of clients out there. I just want to thank everyone who was there for attending.
Super group.
And the shots, when we did our image review sessions, the shots that everyone got were outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about you, but after seeing a few of them, I thought, I'm just going to leave. No, they did a great job.
Yeah, it was really awesome. And so, you know, kind of the typical workshop day, right? We get out there pretty early in the morning because we wanted to be set up a good 20 to 30 minutes prior to sunrise. And that was to capture that wonderful pastel twilight. This is extremely useful if you don't have any clouds. It's even better if you have some wispy clouds. But if you've got a sky that's just empty, then shooting before sunrise gives you or after sunset gives you two kind of strong advantages, in my opinion. One is that it's low contrast, so you don't have things blowing out.
Mm-hmm.
But also you get that wonderful midnight blue sky.
Right.
And the warm light, because the things will pink up a good 10, 15 minutes prior to sunrise.
Yeah. And we'll include some images, that'll go out when this podcast goes out so that you're able to see what that looks like. Do you want to mention to people where they can find those?
Yeah, we'll post images in the show notes link on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. We'll make a gallery. And that's facebook.com/imagedoctors. That's where you can find links to all the episodes. The episodes are also at my website, luminescentphoto.com. You can just click the tab for Image Doctors and you'll get the show archive of all the episodes there as well.
Yeah.
You know, the Badlands is an interesting place. You know, we were talking about the lenses that we brought and what we used. People think of landscapes as being a wide-angle lens territory, but frankly, that was my least used lens.
Same here.
You know, the 24-70 and the 70-200 and even the 300mm or 70-200 with a teleconverter. In the Badlands are these massive overlips. You're so far away from things that setting your lens at a really wide focal length using 14 or 20 or whatever is it pushes everything back too far.
Mm-hmm.
And the little mountain ranges look, or the, you know, the rock formations look tiny. And there's a time when that's useful, And that's when you got the heroic sky, you know, the clouds are doing something and you want the sky to really be the dominant element in your photo. But those mid-range zooms and even the telephoto, going in and focusing on close-ups of things. We had some great clouds a couple of days out there. Mm-hmm. We had some mammatus clouds one evening. And we had the wispy pre-dawn clouds that got pink light on them one morning. So it was great. You know, we got to use a little bit of everything. But what else didn't we use? We didn't use grad filters.
No, we didn't take them.
We didn't even bring them, right?
Right.
I had the solid NDs, as you did, but we didn't have the kind of clouds that would have worked for long exposure. So Those got left in the bag. I'm trying to think about anything else. But it's just a fantastic place to shoot, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, that was my, it's a staple of my workshop program, but there's a reason for it. For everything you just said, it's not crowded, especially before sunrise. It's very easy to spread out. There's a variety of shots to be had any given day. And I keep going back because I never know what I'm going to get there. Yeah. One year I went there, we had fog and it was just amazing. The whole overlook was socked in with fog and you had the little tips of the rock formation sticking out. One of my clients came with me on that trip 5 years ago. And he was telling me, he looked through all his photos from 5 years ago, goes, all my pictures from this year are totally different. You went to the same place two different times. So it's a great place to go back to.
Yeah.
I do have a workshop there next year. It's going to be my 10th anniversary trip. It's registration is actually open already. It's going to be August 26th through 30th, 2020. So if you're interested in going to this fabulous place and having some instruction and someone there to show you around all the good spots, look me up and it'll be cool. So what do we got next? We have a question, don't we?
Yep, we do.
So this was a listener question submitted to us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors. And it comes from David Hearn. Thanks, David. And David's question, he wanted some clarification on the differences between mechanical and electronic shutters. And this is something that comes up mostly with the mirrorless cameras, but it's also sometimes available in DSLRs. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. You want to lead the way, Rick, because you're more knowledgeable about this. And starting with mechanical shutters,
we'll see how
right?
It goes. Yeah, mechanical shutters are just old school approach that everyone is used to. It's like a window blind kind of thing.
Opens focal up, plane shutter, right?
Yeah, opens up at the start of the exposure, closes it at the end. And you can have, you know, a slight amount of vibration just due to the shutter opening, you know, which at certain shutter speeds can create problems. This will be something we talk a little bit about in a later episode that's all about what we worry too much about. But nevertheless, there is a thing there. And then there are other variants on that. There's a thing called electronic front curtain shutter. And in that case, you're using the sensor and turning on the sensor to start the exposure. Mm-hmm. And then the mechanical shutter ends it. So you don't have the vibration problem.
Right. And that's a setting you can set on some of the Nikon DSLRs.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's available on D810, might even be on D800, but look for a setting called electronic front curtain.
Mm-hmm.
So electronic shutters basically are using the sensor in some either part or all of the exposure, right?
Right.
Okay. And then there's the full electronic shutter. And that one's where just the sensor is just turning on or off.
Exactly. And that's really good from a vibration standpoint. It's also completely silent. Which can be nice in some shooting circumstances if you're trying to not disturb people.
Right.
But it's got some down, and depending on the camera, it can enable some very high shutter speeds, you know, above 1/8000th of a second, which can be good if you're shooting a fast lens, wide open in daylight, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be helpful. The downside, and this, again, this varies a little bit between cameras, but if you're shooting fast action, it's not a good setting. It has to do with how the sensor, you know, builds up the image. It's kind of a scan, and you'll get really strange shapes if you have a object moving. You know, it can be leaning forward or backward seemingly and distorted. So you have to be a little bit careful with it. It's not all good. And the other thing is it doesn't typically work with electronic flash.
Okay, so in a nutshell then, if you're shooting flash, mechanical shutter is the way to go. If you're shooting, you know, and then depending on your camera, if you're shooting something like landscapes with a tripod with mirror lockup, electronic front curtain, or on a mirrorless camera, electronic front curtain is great, as is fully electronic. But if things are moving, you want to keep it to the electronic front curtain or mechanical.
Right.
I mean, and by moving, we're talking like fast moving things.
Yeah.
So
and there can be some issues with electronic front curtain when you get to higher shutter speeds. And in some cases, the camera will move off of electronic front curtain to fully mechanical automatically. Sometimes that's a setting you use. It's not a huge deal, but in general, you get above 500th of a second, 1,000th of a second. It's nicer to use the mechanical shutter. And you're not going to have the vibration problem, frankly.
No, not those speeds.
Not at those shutter speeds.
So the fly in the ointment here is just that the settings for these are very camera and manufacturer dependent.
Yeah.
So we're not going to go into those. You'll have to find those. For example, on the Nikon Zs, if you want to use full electronic shutter, that means you put it in silent shooting mode. And D850 has that, I think, too, if you're using live view. So there's ways to achieve it that might not be called electronic shutter.
Right.
You might have to be called. So you'll have to look through your manual to do that.
In some cameras, it's an anti-shock setting to get the electronic front cutter and the curtain, and you set it to a delay of zero. And again, you have to read through your instruction books, but they're not too hard to find. It just takes a little bit of experimentation.
Well, that's awesome. Well, and thanks, David, for the question. If you've got your if you have a question for us that you'd like to hear answered on the air, please do submit it to us at facebook.com/imagedoctors. All right, so we're about out of time for today's episode, so we're going to, but it was fun.
I'm still going through images and...
Yeah.
It was...
I got 900 and something...
Rich.
Captures, so that was really great.
Yeah.
One thing we just like to shamelessly plug ourselves, we are looking to help cover the cost of our bandwidth, which has gone up significantly since we brought the podcast back. And so we are humbly asking for small donations, you know, $2 or something like that. It will help. It will go directly to paying our bandwidth costs and helping us upgrade some of our microphone equipment and mic stands and stuff that we use.
So, and that's all we'll use it for, is that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's not exactly a huge slush fund at this point. But if you enjoy the podcast, we would really appreciate it. You can find a link to that on our Facebook page, as well as on the show episodes at luminescentphoto.com. We really appreciate it. Until then, though, happy shooting, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.